another episode of Speaking the Lawn, the official podcast of Streaking the Lawn. Once again, my name is Pierce, and once again, I have Zach with me today. Hello, Zach.
How's it going, Pierce?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Feeling good.
Excellent. We also are rejoined by Ben. Ben, welcome back. How are you?
Wonderful. Basketball is back. I'm back on the podcast.
Basketball is back. Basketball is my favorite sport. Did you guys know that? I like the
I like when they win by 30.
Run and up and down the court. And I like slam dunks. Okay, I don't know the rest of that song, but basketball is back. We're here to talk about the Hoos, of course, starting 1-0. We could talk about football, but, you know, after one of the worst performances this season against Georgia Tech, Virginia is no longer in bowl game consideration, and it sort of all boils down to it. This point, can they beat the Hokies, which seems far less likely after the Georgia Tech game than it did after some encouraging performances against North Carolina and even Miami. If you're listening to this, you probably watched, but Calandria made some freshman errors after Tony Muscat got injured again, and apparently the defense can't do anything if Cam Robinson isn't playing. So it does not bode well for a short week as they play Thursday night against a very, very good Louisville team. But they've surprised us before, so we'll see Thursday night if they can surprise us again. I'm more worried about the long-term health for that Commonwealth Clash matchup in a few weeks. Not that I'm writing them off. Perhaps they will be victorious against Louisville, because that would be a very Louisville thing to do and in turn a very UVA football thing to do. So we are rooting for them, of course, but we're here, I think, more so to talk about the men's basketball team defeating the evil Tarleton State Tarletons or Texans, or I don't know. They wore purple, so I was, you know, carrying it over from the previous game, of course, the loss against the Purple Paladins. I think we got some revenge against purple teams last night in the John Paul Jones Arena. Zach, the question on everyone's mind, of course, is the roster. It's the starting lineup compared to where we're going to see the starting lineup in ACC play. It's the new faces. What were some exciting immediate takeaways from this big season opening win for the Hoos?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of things. I think there's a lot of positives, still some negatives and some question marks that remain, but I think the biggest one, and this led my takeaways and it led Ben's stock up, stock down, stock neutral piece, is Reese Beekman. I mean, that this is the quintessential game opener or season opener Reese Beekman performance that you would have asked for. Yes, he was 0-for-3 from three, but otherwise he was just about perfect.
The 3-point attempts looked mighty shaky.
Yeah, those weren't pretty. that was some first game rust. That's what we're gonna call that.
Okay.
He missed two other shots. He missed two shots that were not from three, if you also counting free throws. So of the 16 he took.
I'm not saying it was a bad Reese Beekman performance.
No. I know. I was just throwing that off to the side, and I think he's proven capable as a catch and shoot guy to some degree, not on a high volume. What, he was like 38% last year. On, like,
it was decent last year. They did look pretty bad. Pierce is right. Not only was he 0-for-3, but they were not particularly close attempts.
Okay,
they looked ugly.
I was trying to be positive after a 30-point win. That's, if you guys want to drag me down, we can get straight into my Jake Gross takes.
Reward Zach for finally bringing some Zach positivity. So keep going, Zach. Reese Beekman, great game from the
start
player.
Yeah, 7 assists, 4 rebounds, 3 steals, 1 block, 27 minutes. Not that plus minus is that important, but plus 34 in 27 minutes is pretty crazy. And that's the only guy who whose plus minus was greater than the final differential or the final point differential, which is, like, I don't know, slightly interesting. I don't know
how analytics,
like, they're good with Reese Beekman on the floor, like, shocking. I also just thought you saw what he looks like in an offense with shooters around him. I mean, 6 of his 7 assists were from three. He got to be the player with the highest usage rate on this team in this game. And you sort of just saw him be able to this is like him to his fullest effect. And if he knocks down one of his three threes, which again, I know we're not pretty, I'm not saying that they were, but like I think that he is just, this is not a hot take, but he's just going to be so freaking good this year. And I think that you have the pieces around him to allow him to really flourish, because even on threes, like most of Virginia's three-pointers that fell came either off of one of his assists, they hit 10 and he assisted six of them, or off of him touching the paint and then kicking it out and ball movement, maybe someone else attacking a closeout and then kicking it back out. Really just everything starts with him on either end of the floor. And it's really exciting. And it's great to see him come out with just a pretty emphatic game one performance.
Agreed. Ben?
Yeah, to echo that point, on almost every single three-pointer Virginia had came off of Reese. I'm not sure if it's a good thing or a concerning thing that so much of their good offense was just initiated by Reese dribble drives into the paint, drawing help, kicking it out. And those three-pointers, those six that he assisted, and then a few where there was one where he kicked to McNeely in the corner and he swung it to Groves at the top of the break for a catch-and-shoot three. Just, he is the straw that stirs the drink for the Virginia offense. And when he is getting into the paint, getting paint touches, they just look so much better. It was night and day when he came out of the game. I thought they looked like they didn't really know how to run the offense with no Reese on the floor, which is probably where some of that plus minus differential comes from. And I'm a little nervous against better teams that might make it a point of emphasis to not overhelp on the Reese drives, because realistically teams are probably better off staying attached on the perimeter and letting Reese try and turn his way around a defender for a tough finish than just collapsing and giving us those wide open spot up threes for McNeely, for Groves, for Rhodey. But it's promising for now. We'll see if it keeps up against better defenses. And the 3-point shooting is definitely very encouraging, especially after that scary blue white performance where they really couldn't hit anything. Although maybe that was just a sign that the Virginia 3-point defense is really good. Who knows? Although Tarleton State did brick a lot of wide open threes, which was nice of them. But man, McNeely, Rhodey, Groves, gonna be good shooters. We're pretty set on the perimeter this year. Beyond that, it's a little scary. Dunn's shots look good, even though I think he only made one three. But yeah, McNeely is for real. I don't know if I just forgot how good he is, but he is a ridiculously good jump shooter.
I think that was one of my immediate takeaways, was how calm Isaac looked. You know, it just was sort of this immediate, not that he didn't look calm last year at points, but he definitely looked like a freshman last year. Mm-hmm. And usually he played really well, and he did not look like a freshman this year whatsoever, which I think bodes well for a big jump in performance. I think we're going to see him be a reliable big-time scorer in most games, hopefully.
It was a pretty clear point of emphasis to just let him get shots up. I felt like he took two threes from the wing in transition, which I feel like you never see from Virginia, and not even like wide open. Like, it was like semi-transition, semi-contested, and he just stepped right into those confidently. He had 8 attempts in however many minutes he played. He clearly has a extremely green light.
It was just a very ho-hum performance from McNeely. It was just kind of matter-of-factly 4-for-8 from three. And yeah, I'll echo everything else that you guys said. He's also just so innately comfortable in move for blocker, where he's just numerous times he's just playing with defenders around a pin-down screen, around a flare, whatever it may be, whether he's fading into the corner, cutting up, curling around, getting space. It was just really easy in this game, and I think that it won't always be really easy, just because you're going to play teams with bigger players who are more accustomed to playing against sides who are going to be, they're just going to scout better and whatnot, and scout specifically for him. But at the very least, teams are going to have to do that against McNeely in this offense. And sure, I think that just immediately does open things up. And Ben, your point about like not helping off of Reese. And I think that that's a good one. And I think that like how well Reese can score for himself will eventually be a big determining factor in how good this offense is. I do think that he was really, really good getting to the rim himself in this game, even beyond just being a passer. Like he missed 1 2-point field goal and he probably should have been should have gotten a foul there, like just getting to the rim. That floater he had before the half, yes, it was a buzzer beater, he had to put it up, but like he just looks so under control when he does get to the paint, whether it is passing or driving the hoop. And again, it's against a team that didn't have anybody on the floor that was taller than 6'6", so it's going to be more difficult against the Dukes, the UNCs, I was going to say the Florida States, but you know what I mean, the bigger teams. Sure. Even the Floridas that this team's going to play. But for now, like, I think you can be happy with sort of how he put things together. And then beyond that, I mean, they just got so many points from so many different guys that sort of how we, I mean, we talked about this, how different guys are going to be able to step up at different times. I think you sort of saw that potential in game one. Obviously they put up 80 against a bad team, so there's going to be a lot of guys with a lot of points, but it seems like there's different ways that this team can still score. Even if it is sort of created by Reese.
They weren't without their little bit of a rut, you know, which happens in most games for most teams, but it was sort of funny to get to see them get off to this blazing hot start. And then, sort of in the middle or the later end of the first half and the earlier midpoint of the second half, whatever it was, rotations or just a few shots not falling, you sort of got into that Virginia offense taking it to the end of the shot clock and no one really looking confident and then missing the final thing. So we're like, all right, we're still there, but we need a plan for when Reese isn't on the floor or Isaac doesn't get the pass at, you know, a good opportunity when the defense is playing them correctly. What are we going to do? Which every team's going through and everything like that. It was just sort of music, be like, there's the UVA offense that has haunted us before. Obviously they look great though, and I think the outside shooting, you know, is going to be the thing that we keep talking about. Like if they shoot above 40%, they're going to win a lot of games. If they don't, they might lose some games. Yeah, that's most teams too, right? But I bring that up because I think inside scoring is never going to be a major focus for this team on offense. And that's going to mean you got to hit your jumpers. They did last night, but we've seen recently in, you know, Virginia teams that couldn't hit their jumpers. So a lot of new faces. Hopefully bodes well that Rhodey is a consistent shooter. Hopefully Groves continues to stretch the floor. I was a little surprised to see him in the starting lineup, though I know we're going to get a bunch of different starting lines up through the next few weeks. If Groves was a surprise, he made up for any I would say questioning of it by making those shots, though the two of them came in the second half. So the first half he sort of got in foul trouble, definitely had that deer in the headlights look on defense, which is why I was even more surprised, you know, like that if that must be a normal thing in practice. And so that must be something Tony's going, well, that's okay, we still want it, what do you want? You know, usually it's like defense or nothing, right? So I was confused. Not confused, I was just like, oh, curious that the guy who looked the most lost in the new defense got a starting role. But he made up for it by hitting some good shots. So I'm sure we'll see plenty of them, and I'm sure he'll look more comfortable in the defense as things move along. Zach, what was a surprise? Probably a pleasant surprise, because I can't think of too many negatives, but either way, what was the surprise that you took away?
I think, and I wasn't entirely surprised by this fact, but I think just Blake Buchanan being comfortable playing against a five-out offense with a lot of guards bodes really well for him long term and this season. I think that probably speaks to some of the trouble that Jake Groves had, like in games against real competition where he's going to be sort of where he's going to struggle. I think it's going to be more ball screen coverage. Charleston State just didn't really run many ball screens. Okay. And so on the couple that they did against Groves, he did hard hedge. He didn't look horrible. I would like to probably see them play drop coverage, especially assuming it's probably Reese who's going to be guarding the ball there. But I thought that just stepping away from Groves for a second, if you'd, well, I'll include him in this point. If you just, if you told someone who knows UVA basketball and knows how UVA basketball bigs in particular play early in their career, in their first game for Virginia, whatever it may be, and you said, look at Blake Buchanan and look at Jake Groves and tell me how many years they've played in the Virginia system just from this game alone. I don't think anyone in their right mind who knows UVA basketball well enough would tell you that Blake Buchanan was in his first game for Virginia. I mean, he was just so smooth. And I know he had 1 point, it was one for four from the free throw line. I know that. And I'm ready for people to say he had 1 point and four rebounds and one block. What are you talking about? But this guy, I mean, he's so under control, right? Yeah. Two fouls in 17 minutes. I don't know the last time.
Well, one of those foul calls was just like the whole arena, including the coach and Buchanan.
One in the post
were just like, what are you looking at?
That just being bigger. Like that
horrible.
Hard to get past.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I think that he is, and it just especially like the way that he could slide his feet on the perimeter against guards just, I think, indicates that he will be such a good ball screen defender on this team. I mean, that one play, that one block that he had where there was some action on the perimeter, a guard essentially crossed him up left to right. He dropped his hips, carried with him, and then just blocked the crap out of his layup attempt. Buchanan is special defensively, and if they can get anything out of him on offense, I think they will be able to once teams do start keying in more on Reese out of ball screens and don't help on the backside as much, like to that rolling big. He's going to be good in the short roll. He's an alley-oop threat. I think Buchanan was a major positive from this game, and I think it also Jordan Miner looked fine in this game. I think he was probably what you expected of him. But Blake Buchanan being the first guy off the bench and playing ahead of Miner, I think immediately raises this team's ceiling this year, just because I think that if he can do more than Miner on either end of the floor, I just think just because of his size and skill set. And so if he's already getting minutes ahead of Miner, I think that just indicates that he's going to continue to down the line this season and can be the true center that the Virginia team needs. I think they were best with him on the floor. Other than Groves' made threes, like that's really the only thing that's keeping Groves probably in the starting lineup is his ability to hit threes. And that's meaningful, right? That's valuable. But if you're looking like down the line, that there's no way that Blake Buchanan doesn't have a major role in this team, which is crazy to say for a true freshman center.
Sure. Ben, what were some surprises you took away?
So just to add something else on the Buchanan point, I had the same takeaway initially about him looking really, really good on defense. But then, 1 point, should be worried, didn't do much on offense. And then I rewatched the game this morning, and they actually did a pretty crappy job of finding him around the basket. He could have pretty easily had way more points. There's a play in the first half where Leon Bond grabs an offensive rebound right after he came in. Buchanan rolling to the basket. No one near him should have had an open dunk, and Bond just didn't see him. Another play where he slips his screen on a pick and roll with Dante Harris. He's wide open around the basket. Harris makes a tough pass, but just doesn't hit him in the hands. And it's a tough catch. I think he ended up getting free throws there maybe, or kicking it out, but that should have been a dunk. And then there was another play in the second half where McNeely literally just threw a pocket pass to him for a wide open dunk. And he scored, but they called a little ticky-tack touch foul.
Yeah.
And so it didn't count. But he finishes that game with 1 point. If he shoots a little better from the free throw line and just gets the wide open dunks when he was open for them, that's like a 8 or 10 point performance. And we're looking at it a lot differently, and instead of saying, oh, this guy could be something, it's, oh my god, that's an incredible debut for a true freshman. But I think the surprises for me beyond Buchanan, which was obviously very encouraging, is Leon Bond. I think the redshirt year looks like it has been great for his confidence. He looks very comfortable finishing plays with the ball in his hands on offense. And I did not realize how much of a threat he was going to be on the offensive glass. He just looked like too much for that undersized Tarleton State team. And as Pierce mentioned, they didn't really have a guy over 6'6", I think. And that didn't really shine through with like Groves wasn't really able to take advantage of that. Buchanan wasn't, Dunn really wasn't. But Leon Bond was the one guy they just could not handle on the glass. And he was out hustling guys, out muscling guys all game. And then it was really cool to see it culminate in that insane putback dunk, which definitely the highlight of the game for me was him just going up, reaching back, throwing that down. When he jumped, I thought he was just going to grab it and come down. And there was no way he could dunk that, but just a flash of the special athleticism and a guy who just like puts up points. I mean, he had 10 points in 9 minutes, four offensive rebounds, just incredibly active and incredibly encouraging debut. I think both freshmen, one true, one redshirt, looked really, really good today.
I think you get a little Justin Anderson comparisons with Bond after this performance, not only because he's a good rebounder, good athlete, putback dunk, but also easily the most charismatic guy on the team, which he, yeah, of course, everyone knows he was last year too, even though he wasn't playing. So we'll certainly look forward to more of things on and off the court from Bond. I was really impressed with Harris at the point, off the ball too. That quickness that we learned about from Zach, everybody asking everybody who was the hardest person to guard or stay in front of. it plays right into, I would say, a skill set that Beekman has some of course, but you know, you want to see on a team and no one else is really bringing a ton of that, right? And so if you can get some of that from Beekman, but Harris can really be that guy who can get past an initial defender, leads to more of those kick out passes that isn't Beekman being the sole person. Now I will say Harris got maybe past people even better than Reese, but then went for these just absurd finishes. Like there was one that he spun off his hip and it didn't go anywhere near the basket. I think he got fouled on that one. And so it's like, okay, well, you're getting shots. That's good. But, so maybe it was like, I know I got fouled, so I'm just going to throw it up type of thing. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt there. But it wasn't the only extremely difficult finish for Dante out there that did not go in too. So I'm excited by that offensive potential and obviously he fits well into the defense too, so to keep going down the line of new faces out there, I think Harris is going to be really important, not only for what he brings, but also for the fact that it can ease some of that point guard minutes off of Reese. And you know, if there's one consistent thing we've seen over the years, it's UVA and its star players maybe getting a little too tired as the season culminates. Hopefully this leads to usable depth that we haven't seen for a while on this roster. And he's going to be a big part of that.
Yeah. I'm curious what offensive scheme UVA utilizes when Reese is off the floor. Cause as you said, like they don't want to run him for 36 minutes a game all year long. Mm-hmm. And I think Ben made the point earlier that for as good as Harris looked and as just sort of comfortable as he looked, he also just, he's not Reese. Like he's just not creating offense for everyone all of the time. Sure. He can get to the rim himself. He'll be good in ball screens, but he's not as complete of a player. Why would he be? Like this is a All-American first round draft pick type player, so I'm not faulting him for that. But I am interested to see how they approach running offense without Reese on the floor. For I think 4 possessions in the first half, they went to their sort of triangle 3-man offense that they ran for a while last year with BVP. The personnel was a little bit weird. Like I think it was essentially like what you would think maybe a starting lineup would be next year. Actually, that might have been later in the game, but I think it was like Groves, Harris, McNeely, Dunn, and Harris, and Dunn and, did I say Harris twice? I don't know.
It was Rhodey.
Thank you. Yeah, Rhodey. And so Dunn and Harris were on the outside of the triangle, and then Rhodey, McNeely, and Groves were on the inside. I was a little bit confused by that because I would think that you would want to, like, the 3 best shooters are all on the interior there. I would think you would want at least one of those guys on the outside, and then probably Dunn and probably Harris as well on the interior, because those are guys who they're going to get to the rim more than the other three. It was fine. It was like 4 points on four possessions. One was a Harris isolating at the top with the key and driving for one of his sort of crafty layups, and then another was just IMAX sort of getting lucky, getting fouled on a dribble drive. They're going to experiment with that Reese on the floor, because I don't think you can just go high ball screen with Dante Harris and then expect things to work out perfectly just because he's not Reese. I think mover blocker is probably the default, as it typically is. But that also just puts more responsibility on Rhodey to get to the hoop, on them to find Groves fading into the corner, maybe some more done. We didn't really see any face up post game from him. I'd like to see some of that at a certain point, maybe when we get against some more legitimate competition. I think that's a question mark. You don't have to be beating teams without Reese on the floor, but if you can just remain even and not sort of lose games when he's not on the floor, so then he's not, you know, playing 38 minutes a game in December and then hurting his hamstring and not being effective for the rest of the year. How they manage that and how they decide to approach it schematically, especially offensively, will be worth watching.
And to the Harris point, I'm just really excited to see him play this season. I think he has a really unique skill set that we haven't really seen at Virginia in a while, but he also has, coming from Georgetown, some traits as a ball dominant type of guard that typically Tony Bennett doesn't really recruit for. And I'm just interested to see the interplay between fitting his style into the bigger UVA schemes on offense and defense. Offensively, I noticed the same thing you mentioned, Zach, about them switching to triangle when Reese went out in the first half. I assumed it might have been Reese is out, let's switch up the offense. But then he came back in and they stuck with triangles. So I think they might have just been trying out some different sets and experimenting. But it definitely makes some sense to go to an offense that allows for more isolation, more breaking guys down off the dribble. And it was a little bit ugly. Like Andrew Rhodey, mid-post touches, he's not quite Sam Hauser. And they had a hard time creating offense, to be being real, but it's cool that they're gonna at least give it a shot. Harris, when I wrote a preview of him last season, his shooting percentages were extremely low at Georgetown. He was sub 40% from the field and 26% from three, which is just scary. And I looked at his shot profile and it was so unique, because a lot of guys are taking their jump shots primarily off the catch. His were 90% off the dribble, and then his finishing percentage at the rim was so low, and I was like, how is this happening? And then you watch him play and it sort of makes sense. He definitely, once he beats his man, is looking to get a shot up. Sometimes those are not the most efficient shots, but it's an interesting contrast to Reese, who I feel like always uses beating the initial man as an opportunity to find the next pass, draw help, create something within the flow of the offense. Harris can just go get buckets occasionally, and it's nice to have a guy like that in the system. Defensively, I think it's cool that he seems to be allowed to play with a little bit of that super aggressiveness, jumping passing lanes, gambling for steals. It's going to pay off in some games, it's going to not pay off sometimes. I was a little surprised by how much he gambled this game. I was worried that Tony Bennett and the pack line would sort of beat that out of him, because that is very much how he played at Georgetown. But it looks like we will be getting peak Kihei 2.0, stealing, passing lane passes, getting runouts. I'm looking forward to it.
I think that aggressiveness was something that was sort of true across the board for some of UVA's plus defenders. I mean, Ryan Dunn was really aggressive with his hands in this game, almost to sort of a detriment to positional defense at times. He would double in the post and then sort of jump up and down and wave his arms and then sort of get lost in the rotation, which kind of surprised me. It might have just been first game jitters, and there were I think at least two fouls on 3-point shots, one from Harris, one from Dunn. So I think Ben makes a good point that it will pay off at times and it won't pay off at times, and you can't only expect it to pay off and then ask for them not to do it when it doesn't pay off, or when it hurts them. So yeah, live by the sword, die by the sword a little bit there. But I do think that I think Dunn in particular can be a little bit more reserved. He probably just got bored because there wasn't much to do on ball for him in this game. Like, he just didn't really, there was no one was going at him, because why would they? Against real teams, so get to go up against, you know, an actual guy who wants to go score buckets. And so I don't really want to like shift too much blame on them defensively, but I do think that, I will say, doubling Groves in the post automatically is interesting. Like, that is a development that I was watching coming into this game, and it's not like Tarleton State has a post presence. Like, it's not like they have some dude that they're just going to throw the ball into. And it wasn't just when the guy had his back to the basket, they were sending Dunn immediately, no matter what, and just forcing the ball out of there, which I get, because they probably want to do that against real, like against Florida. That's what they're want to do.
In your tune-up game to practice.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. And they're like, okay, if we give up a couple threes off of this, then fine. We want to get the rotation sorted out. But I do think that that says they want to do that against Florida, which I think is probably the right approach. You have Dunn. You have Reese Beekman as sort of your center fielder back there. And Harris has good instincts. And Rhodey has surprisingly good hands. I think you saw that in his steal rate last year. I think he has length too. And McNeely is just a sound player in the pack. So not overly concerned about anything defensively, but I do think how they play differently depending on who is on the floor in the front court and just how aggressive Bennett allows them to be, will be, not to just keep saying worth watching, but yes, it will be worth watching.
Well, for sure. And I mean, if we're looking at minutes, you know, we already talked about it, Harris at great length, but he played 24 minutes compared to Reese's 27, right? So, you know, we know he's going to be one of the first guys off the bench over and over. Dunn and Groves, 21 and 15 minutes respectively, both probably impacted by the foul trouble that they both got into. But I mean, the biggest question mark to me is Minor, only 11 minutes in an opener against an overmatched opponent as far as the front court goes. I was hoping, Zach, that you'd ask Tony about Minor in the post game, but what are your thoughts there?
I think Jordan Minor is a perfectly respectable depth piece for the front court on this team. He also played in a 2-3 zone for 4 years where he just sat in the paint and kind of was just
journalism.
Well, yeah, and one unnamed journalist in the press section mentioned that they talked to, basically someone had made a point to them that he's a really good help defender. And it's like, well, yeah, of course he's a good help defender. He played as the middle guy in a 2-3 zone for 4 years. Sure. His one job was to be a good help defender. And not to jump on Minor, that was the role that he had to play. But for a guy who's going to get his minutes defensively, there's an adjustment for playing a 2-3 zone to playing defense as a center. Like, so that is as steep.
A candidate to probably escalate in minutes as it becomes more and more comfortable through the season.
Potentially. I think it depends on just how good Buchanan is. Sure. Like there's a world where Buchanan just plays 23 minutes a game and you don't see Minor. And it's Buchanan or it's Groves. Foul trouble will happen to a freshman. Sure. So yeah, I think that Minor is not, he's not like in the doghouse, but I do think that he's at the edge of the rotation and his minutes are probably more dependent on the guys in front of him than they are on him. He just doesn't, like, he's not obviously a 3-point shooter like Groves is. He has just about the same offensive skill set as Buchanan does and is as probably less fluid than Buchanan defensively and isn't as big. So he's just sort of, he's in a tough spot, but at the same time they have three true bigs. So he's going to play minutes like play. That. Yeah, but I just think that it makes sense to me that he's third in the pecking order right now.
It was a little painful to see Minor not check in until under the 4 minute mark. And then the first possession he came in immediately get beat off the dribble by one of the various Tarleton State guys. It's just, I don't see a path to major minutes for him just because I don't think he has a unique skill that he really brings to the table. I think Buchanan's switchability, size, and just ability to play defense and rebound is probably better than Minor's, which is sort of crazy to say about a true freshman compared to a dude who is just a defensive player of the year in his conference and has already played 4 years of college basketball. But the point about going from the 2-3 zone to the pack line, which are just two incredibly different defensive schemes that ask totally different things of your centers. And the 2-3, he's basically just sitting there playing center field, trying to jump passing lanes, contest shots on the help side. Whereas in the pack line, if he's playing as a big, he's going to be asked to play out on the perimeter, hedge, recover, just run around a lot more than in a zone. And I thought you could see at times when he was in the game, just sort of those like instincts colliding a little bit of him wanting to stay near the basket, maybe to the detriment of giving up an open three on the backside. And there was nothing that was like disqualifying. He didn't look totally lost, but he didn't look totally comfortable either. And then with Groves, who I think is probably a worse defender than Miner, Groves brings a very real skill in the front court, which is jump shooting, which they really don't have anywhere else. I mean, Ryan Dunn is probably your second best shooter at the four or the five. And the difference between Groves and Dunn is pretty sizable at this point. And the reality is that the team will just have to put up with Groves being a little bit slow footed and a little bit out of rotation occasionally. If he's going 3-for-4 from three, those are big points and they help space the four for everybody else.
Yeah.
And if you have, and obviously Ryan Dunn at the four is not going to be losing minutes, but with Dunn, with Groves, with Buchanan, it's just hard to see Miner finding a path to more than like 20 minutes a game, maybe in situational matchups where there's just a big physical guy that you need to guard. I think he looks huge on the court. He's definitely their best suited guy to do that. But beyond that, it's just easier to get the other guys in the game than Miner at this point, in my opinion.
Yeah, I thought he looked comfortable setting screens and rolling off those screens. We only saw him get a pass once in that situation. I think he got fouled or he missed the layup, but he looked comfortable with it. You know, like he seems to be like a guy. I mean, obviously, he's played a lot of basketball at a pretty decent level, so it's seeming like, yeah, obviously Buchanan's immediate ascendance to a prominent role is impacting his minutes, but. As he becomes more comfortable, hopefully we'll see some more minutes from him too, because like we're saying, usable depth is a real strength to this team that we haven't seen in a number of years here in Charlottesville. I guess the last guy that we've mentioned a few times, but we haven't really dug into is Andrew Roddy's performance. So Ben, I'll start things off with you. I thought he looked the part, though maybe the shots weren't falling exactly as much as we would like to see. Hopefully that, you know, does pick up, but the eye test, I thought he looked good.
So I had him in my stock down column in my stock up, stock down post game. After rewatching the game this morning, I think that was probably a little bit harsh on him. He had a few defensive plays that really jumped out to me while I was watching the game as bad in the first like 3 or 4 minutes. There was a closeout where he just like went out really stiff, got beat, gave up a bucket. And there's another play where he just lost his guy. In like before the first time out of the game, and I was like, oh man, this is going to be a growing pains experience. And I guess I just formed that hypothesis, and then I rewatched it and he didn't really mess up at all after the first 3 or 4 minutes. So I guess that's really encouraging, honestly, to see him settling in. The jump shooting is very encouraging. I liked seeing those two very deep three-pointers from above the break. Made one of them, missed one. It's cool that he can shoot them. He missed one on the left wing that was as wide open as you're going to get in college basketball.
One of those two open to actually make it shots. I mean, you can see like his face even changed. He was like, well, guess
like, what is happening?
I guess I should shoot it. Okay, take your time and just like bonk.
But yeah, like we talked about earlier how McNeely went 4-for-8 and it didn't really feel like a fluke. 2-for-5 is 40%. That's a very good percentage. For didn't sure. feel like a fluke at all. And honestly, he probably could have shot even better. The worry for me with Roddy that I do still stand by, and the reason that I guess he wouldn't be in the stock up column, is I don't know how he's going to get to the basket at this level. He just doesn't seem to have the ability to beat guys off the dribble. And from watching his film from St. Thomas, he could sort of make up for it in the Summit League with these sort of nifty, like not full post moves, but like jump stop, get a guy to fly by and then step through, maybe step into a guy, just finish over him.
Yeah.
And that sort of stuff just wasn't really working against Tarleton State. And if that's not working against Tarleton State, I think it was 0-for-3. inside the three-point arc, two misses at the rim, one miss from mid-range. Yeah. None of them really particularly close.
But the ones at the rim, I mean, you think like I, you know,
one of them was decent. One of them, was not great.
Yeah,
I guess like sometimes you can throw those shots in. There was one drive late in the second half that I remember. It came right after the Leon Bond crazy dunk, and I was like, oh, this is a tough contrast between those two plays on back-to-back possessions. I assume it could come with time, and it's going to take some getting used to. You've sort of assumed that with him and Miner both up transferring to a significantly higher level of competition. Although Tarleton State, really, you should be able to hang with that. I guess it's more so the Floridas or the Dukes and UNCs that you'd be scared about the athleticism being overwhelming against. But as a spot up shooter, Rhodey, very good.
Yeah, I think his handle was probably what was most concerning to me, and it wasn't like bad, like it wasn't like he just like couldn't dribble the ball, like he could, but he got stripped bringing the ball up the floor one time. I think he got stripped on a drive at one point. And Tarleton State did put ball pressure on guys, like they did that well. That wasn't just like fluky stuff that happened. But that for a 6'6 guy who's lengthy, like he's gonna have to sort of tighten things up a little bit, or just maybe be a little bit more conservative with where he decides to try to make plays.
Being a spot up shooter, I think he's gonna, you know, there's gonna be a lot of those opportunities for back cuts, right? Like that, the guys are gonna try and close out on him. And I think that, to your point, Ben, about getting to the rim, I think it's gonna be on a pass, right? Like it's not gonna be ISO. And he's sort of got that lanky size to hopefully get some space, you know, to make that move to a rim while the guy's on his back hip after catching the pass. That to me is going to be the strength of his ability in the paint or inside the 3-point arc, at least.
Yeah. And he was 2-for-4 on catch and shoot rhythm threes. Like you mentioned the transition one, which was just weird. And he ideally makes that. But if you just throw that one in the trash for a second, like on catch and shoot threes is where he's most important for this team. And then just not being a negative on defense. So long term, you want him to be able to make more plays with the ball in his hands. And I think that he can, once he gets more comfortable and learns what he can and can't do, and I can thrive as a passer at times. I do think you see where probably Harris is a little bit more reliable, just in bringing the ball the floor and sort of initiating the offense than Rhodey is right now.
And I mean, I'd be remiss not to mention Tane Murray playing 11 minutes. I think, again, you're going to see more games like that than not just against the Tarleton States and whatnot. So I wouldn't be too surprised there. We'll see. I don't know. Maybe it has to do with Andrew Rhodey's growth because they're sort of playing similar roles. It is nice to see five starters, all of whom you would hope could make a catch and shoot open three, right? Groves, Rhodey, Dunn, McNeely, Beekman.
Yep.
I mean, I think that's the goal for all five guys. When's the last time we say that? Ever?
Kid and Shedrick wasn't quite
Florida looks really good. So Friday is going to certainly be a test down in Charlotte for the Hoos, but that's their next game. I think everyone's really excited, but there's a lot of questions to be answered about the rotation that we're going to see. And certainly, if you've been listening to the past few episodes, you know that's coming. So just enjoy the ride as they go through these tinkering games. Don't be upset if not all of them are wins, but certainly this team looks good enough to make them all wins. So we'll see. We got postseason soccer, postseason field hockey, lots of things to stay tuned to the blog about. Of course, the women's team as well, we're very excited about here at streakinglaw.com. So until next week, when we talk about the big football win over Louisville, I'm manifesting it here at the end of the episode. For everybody at the blog, I'm Pierce. Go Hoos.